Welcome, everybody, to the .NET Ring of Honor podcast. I am Darren Guthridge. I'm joined this week by my co-host, Hayden Bleed, who was not here last week.
I know, I'm sorry. I let you down.
Very much so. You didn't just let me down. You let yourself down.
And I let the members down. They were deprived of me for a week.
Oh, no. They must feel so bad. Those poor, 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 poor people. Is it a healthy start, isn't it?
Is this how it's going to be? Is it this how it's going to be every week from now on? You're just going to be picking on me, picking on me.
The Ring of Honor podcast is a place of peace and love, even between two people from two nations that traditionally don't like each other.
So you're gonna go down the whole England-Wales route as well?
I brought it up. I'm just putting it out there, despite the fact that we're technically married to each other. You know, there's some issues.
As nations, not as people, as nations.
They don't know that we're not married together as people.
Well, you know, we want to keep that quiet. We don't want to start rumours, you know?
It's legal over here.
Well,
isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, it is. Okay, that's a weird start. Let's get into Ring of Honor. Yeah, it was a episode 199, as they pointed out, as a very excitable Mark Briscoe pointed out at some point during this episode. So next week is the big, apparently, 200th episode of Ring of Honor TV. So episode 199, I felt, was a middle of the road show. I think it's fairly safe to say. Would you agree?
Yeah, I actually enjoyed the show. They had three good matches. They built up the matches for the iPay-per-view next week, and they also had a hook for people to tune in next week. It wasn't anything spectacular, but as you said, middle of the road. I'll try that again. It would be what you'd expect, really.
Okay, Seth. You got bugaboo. I just want to know, I got off the phone with my goddaughter not too long ago, and she was more comprehensible than you. So, there we go.
that's not hard at the moment.
No, not at all. Yeah, I enjoyed the show. I gave the show overall a hit in my hit list. But yeah, if you're going to have episodic TV going forward, this was always going to happen. There's going to come weeks where you're not firing on all cylinders, but you scrape through in the end. It was okay. And to explain that in full, we are now going to go through the show that aired last night on Destination America over the previous weekend on the Sinclair Broadcasting Network and today on the Ring of Honor website. It was taped in Terminal 5 in New York City. It's where they held last year's end-of-year show, which I always forget the name of, and it is called... Aiden, help. Oh, Final Battle.
Final Battle. It was on tip Final of my tongue, Battle. Sorry.
2014 was shot in Terminal 5. This is the first time they're back for this TV taping. Last week's episode was also in Terminal 5, I believe. Yes,
yep,
it was.
It was indeed.
The show opened with Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino welcoming us to the show. And out came the decade.
Can I stop you there, Darren? Just for two moments. I don't know if this has been shown before last week and this week, but on the website, do they have the Create an Excellence video before the actual introduction video?
The, that one.
It's basically just like a few shots of like former ROH stars like CM Punk and Samoa Joe and Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson.
Yes.
Has that been there for like ever, or have I just completely missed it, or has it only been over the last 2 weeks? You know,
that's been there for as long as I've been watching Ring of Honor on the website.
The source that I watch my videos from, that it's only been the last 2 weeks that they've shown it. So
right.
So I thought it was something new, so I was going to bring that up, but
no, that's they've had that sting for a while. It's a very smart hook, to be fair, to show.
It is very.
Look at, you know, Punk, Seth, Brian, Cesaro, Steen, they've all come through here. So it's a very good idea to hook people, especially, like, you know, TNA's banking off, they have all the stars of yesteryear.
Mm-hmm.
Ring of Honor is where you can see all the stars of tomorrow, it seems. So it's a very smart hook.
And that's the thing, that's why I know it's not been on there before, because I would have noticed it and I would have commented on it before. But over the last 2 weeks is the first time that on my source, anyway, I've actually been able to see it. So,
I was just going to say,
please proceed. Ignore me.
In bad news for Ring of Honor programming, there was no Ring of Honor code line this week. I know. The tradition has died. I'm sorry, but we won't get to find out the answer to trivial questions that no one cared about.
And be a true insider.
And be a true insider with your Women of Honor action screenshot. There was Super Beta Prostate advert, so don't worry, everybody. The Super Beta Prostate adverts haven't gone anywhere. Everything is okay. Yeah, the Decade are out first. Never a good start in my book. Mm. But out came Matt Sydal. And the first match of the night was Adam Page of the Decade taking on Matt Sydal. This was set up last week where Adam Page insinuated that he and ACH, who's usually Matt Sydal's tag partner, will be seeing each other and carrying on their feud at Death Before Dishonor in a few weeks' time. And Page said that he was going to take apart ACH's friend before he takes apart him at Death Before Dishonor. They showed a quick replay of Adam Page beating Matt Sydal in a tag match featuring ACH and BJ Whitmer at Best in the World from a few weeks ago. Adam Page got the pin off of his Rite of Passage. They've finally given it a name. I may have missed the name in previous weeks, but it's his awesome reverse kneeling tombstone pile driver that I always have to harp on. ROH is full of fantastic finishes at the moment. Yeah, so they're finally giving it a name. And after that replay, we went straight into the match. One point to point out during the match, obviously Colby Carino, Steve Carino's son, was out with the Decade. At one point, Adam Page found himself on the floor. Matt Sydal went to dive over the ropes onto him, and Page pulled Karibo. Oh, God, we're getting Yu-Gi-Oh! Flashbacks. He pulled Colby Carino into the firing line, and he took the splash from Sydal. Page made sure to recover, get on the apron, and hit his cool shooting star press to a standing Sydal. The finish of the match came when Matt Sydal went for the shooting star press, but Page managed to get to the apron before he had a chance to jump off. Page came back in with his cool inside out clothesline, where he kind of, you know, jumps over the ropes and hit a mean clothesline. This set up the Rite of Passage, but Sydal escaped. Sydal hit a running knee, set up for the shooting star press, and hit it to get the 1-2-3. Immediately afterwards, the Decade jumped him, jumped on Sydal even. This brought out ACH, who went straight for Adam Page, but, you know, the Decade numbers advantage kind of won out in the end. Whitmer got ACH in a rear naked choke and held him there whilst Colby Keno started throwing chairs into the ring, and Page set up Sydal and hit him with the Rite of Passage onto the pile of chairs. Steve Carino was, you know, screaming bloody rage at everybody in the ring, but still chose not to do anything. And the Decade, shortly after the match, the Decade left as ACH tended to Matt Sydal, and the referees ran out to help Matt Sydal. As I said, the match was, I liked the match. I think I was expecting a little bit more, though, because I am very high on Page, and Sydal's has been solid to good ever since he's come back to Ring of Honor. He hasn't had a bad match that I can recall.
Yeah, that's the thing. I thought it was a good match as well. It wasn't, as you said, as good if Page and Sydal were in a full program together, but I thought it was still a good TV match. To your point about Sydal, I've noticed that he's not as quick or sharp in the ring as he used to be, but you would expect that, really, as people get older, and also after the serious ankle injury he had, you know. But when he came back to ROH, I was thinking, he's not going to be the same. But gradually, as the weeks have gone on, he's starting gradually to get better and better.
I don't think he's missing. I might not be noticing, you know, the tiny step off in pace, but I haven't really seen him throttle back any on his high flying or anything. I don't think he's... I think he's done well in his return. I haven't really noticed a marked change, although in some of his longer form matches, he has started to work in the ground game a bit more, which is always appreciated. But yeah, your good point is that this was a TV match, so this wasn't meant to be a barn burner. I do think they have a few extra gears to go into, and maybe I built myself up too much for this match, but it was fine. I think my problem was I was expecting a Decade in interference, so I couldn't buy into any of the pinfalls, including the one that won the match, because I thought BJ Whitmer's any second now he's going to jump in the ring and clobber him, and didn't happen.
He kept threatening there any time that Matt Sydal went up to the top rope. Every single time he was threatening or sort of gesturing as if he was going to go and reach and grab his leg or something like that. So yeah, I was exactly the same.
But see, now this is the odd thing, in that you'd think I'd be all against decade interference matches, because we've been seeing them for like a year now, but in mind to ACH versus Paige in a few weeks, it baffles me that they had, you know, they had Paige lose clean.
That was exactly...
To somebody that... Go on, sorry.
That was, just cause that was exactly the point I was going to make, is the fact that it's Paige and ACH next week. You'd think that they'd want to build up Paige for that match, you know, instead of losing clean to someone who's not going to be involved in that match, you know?
Well, here's the thing. People are, because of his WWE career, Matt Sydal is on perhaps a higher echelon than ACH is at the moment in the eyes of most of the casual fans that will be tuning in. So why would they think, well, you know, Matt Sydal can easily beat Adam Page? That doesn't really help with the momentum going to the match. So for once, a decade interference spot may have actually been the smartest move. I can't believe those words are coming out of my mouth, but it makes a bit of twisted sense here.
The irony is delicious.
I know, right? I hate myself forever saying. And again, just to draw back to this point, for the love of God, please pull the trigger on Steve Corino punching BJ Whitmer in the face.
And that's
looking so bad.
And that's exactly my next point. You know, I just want it to kick into the next gear or just end as I'm getting more and more bored as each week goes by. I'm all for long storylines and storyline arcs and everything, but it's just gone past its peak. I think it went past its peak about 6 months ago. Well, about three months ago.
There wasn't a... It's like you meant to strike when the iron was hot. The iron was never hot during the entirety of this stupid, asinine story. And it was barely even tepid occasionally, but that would have been when to strike.
I just wanted to get on with it and just move on, to be quite honest.
It has to happen at Death Before Dishonor. Simply put, it has to... Something has to happen. Okay, maybe the match doesn't go down, but Carino's got to punch him or do something that says... Okay, next pay-per-view, we're going to be wrapping this up. We will have the Steve Corino versus BJ Whitmer, or however that match falls into place. I would think the end result will be the Corinos back on one team versus Paige and Whitmer. But they really... Because Steve Corino just looks worse and worse as each of these weeks on it. He's just like impotently screaming from the commentary table whilst not doing anything.
Yeah, it's... I'm just looking through my notes now. There's one line he continuously says, and I'm just trying to find it now. Are you proud of yourself? He continuously shouts that at BJ Whitmer, constantly.
Hit him.
Yeah.
He's giving you every single reason there is to just smack him in the face, and he just won't do it. I hope we're not alone on this. I hope everyone else is just like... I feel bad even getting like frustrated about it, because it's so... pointless at this point to even exert emotions toward this story.
We've definitely spent enough time on it.
We've spent too much time on it. So let's move on. After a quick break, they came back and started to hype Death Before Dishonor. The matches announced so far that they were, well, the ones that they hyped themselves are Jay Lethal defending the ROH World Heavyweight title against Roderick Strong. They announced a four-corner survival match even between for the ROH tag titles between the Addiction, the champions, taking on the Kingdom, which is Michael Bennett and Matt Taven, versus Red Dragon versus War Machine. That should be pretty good.
Yep.
And they announced they hyped ACH versus Paige and announced Moose versus Cedric Alexander. Now I missed Best in the World, admittedly, and I didn't know about the Cedric Alexander. Heel turn. I did read up the results, but it must have got lost in translation somewhere. So to see that Vader Scott has now switched to Cedric Alexander, it's kind of interesting. To wit, Vader Scott came out next, grabbed a microphone from ringside and said that Moose had failed as a footballer. Sorry, an American football player. Big distinction there. He'd be a good defender.
He would.
He's a big dude. He would block a lot of people. I wouldn't tackle him.
He would scare the hell out of me, I know that.
Oh, God, yes. He's fouled as an American football player, and he has fouled as a wrestler. And at Death Before Dishonor, Cedric Alexander is going to take away everything that Moose doesn't deserve, because, you know, having famous friends and a lot of money doesn't win matches. Ruthlessness does, and that's what Cedric Alexander has. So what do you think of this new pairing? They've now moved Vader Scott away from Stokely Hathaway, is still with Moose, And Stokely Halliday is just an odd character. He just always seems tacked on to everything that he's with. But what do you think of the pairing of Vader Scott and Cedric Alexander?
I want to see more of it. The problem I had with this promo, I thought it was a really good promo. It was an old school heel manager promo, which made the viewers want the babyface to prove the heel wrong. But my issue with it was the fact that Cedric wasn't with her. So it kind of feels that the feud is between Moose and Vader Scott as opposed to Moose and Cedric with Vader Scott. So I want to see more of it before I can really sort of judge it. But yeah, as I said, I do enjoy Vader Scott's promo in this particular show. But as I said, I don't want Cedric to be moved to the back, if that makes any
right.
sense.
So you don't want a Triple H, Chris Jericho situation?
Exactly.
When Stephanie McMahon became
and a
the heel.
Yeah.
And the dog, yeah. Forgot about the dog. Yeah, you make a very good point there, but I do think... See, I try to think of, like, Cedric Alexander promos, and I really can't remember any. If he's had a substantial one, it's not one that's sticking in my head. I think he can hold his own, but...
Yeah, he had one against... he had one when he faced Moose in that match where we beat the undefeated streak. He had a promo before the match. I think he spoke about how he had a new attitude, he'd lost and he had a new attitude and all that sort of stuff. And I thought that was a pretty good promo back then. But obviously, if it's not stuck in your mind, then it couldn't
be
helpful. No.
Well, I imagine he's further along than Moose is. So you might be able to make the fact that maybe Vader Scott was better off with Moose. But I think people are now warming to Moose because he came in with the usual hostility that he's, you know... sent the way of outside athletes coming into the sport. They're inherently distrusted and disliked, but he has come on leaps and bounds. I think the Ring of Honor fans are starting to get behind him, so maybe the time was right, but I still think he needs a mouthpiece. Whether Stokely Hathaway can be that, I don't know, but yeah, on paper, I'm feeling the Vader's got Cedric Alexander team up. That could have potential. Cedric Alexander can get it done in the ring. There's no question on that.
Definitely.
I used to have a little bit of a question mark in that I hadn't seen, because everyone was hyped about him when I first started watching Ring of Honor, and I was just like, well, yeah, but I haven't seen anything amazing. Ever since then, I've kind of, you know, I've got the idea with him that he has got a lot of in-ring skills that will hopefully take him far, and maybe this is just going to be another piece in the puzzle that helps him get to that next level in the coming months.
And the thing is with Cedric as well, I completely agree, because that show he went to, the PCW event, I think he was in the sixth man, the sixth corner, or six men, and whatever they called it.
There were six people.
Yeah, there you go. But out of all of them, he was the one that stood out, and he's obviously with five other men, you need to have a certain amount of talent and charisma in the ring to actually stand out. So it was at that point I kind of stood up and went, yeah, this boy's got it.
Yeah, he worked that crowd well in person. They were in the opening match, and you've always got that guy for you, but yeah, you're all right. That's a loud car.
It was, yeah. Sorry about that.
Goddamn Liverpoolians and their loud cars.
It's probably stolen.
Oh, don't say that. You're the one in hostile territory, not me.
Yeah, I'm. Yeah, I hope no one heard that.
We're sorry to any of our listeners from Liverpool. Hayden Gleed liked you very much.
If anybody outside heard that, then this might be my final podcast. So I just want to say thanks for everything.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Yes.
Okay. Moving on. Pretty much straight after Vader left, Silas Young came out, and he started arguing with somebody in the crowd. And I looked away, and I looked up and looked again. It was like, Zach Zimmerman? I was like, no, that can't be Zim. And it wasn't Zim.
It wasn't Zim.
But for a split second, I was like, no, but is it? But is it, though? Anyway.
I think we just need to clarify, so, it definitely wasn't Zim.
Definitely wasn't Zim. He just may have looked a bit like Zim. He's texted me so many pictures of dweebs wearing CM Punk t-shirts saying, is this you? So I'm allowed to get a little bit of revenge. Silas Young eventually, after arguing with Zach Zimmerman's clone, got in the ring, and he awaited Will Ferrara, who was last seen on WWE TV as the cameraman that Dean Ambrose... Wait, no, Seth Rollins attack that fought Dean Ambrose attacked him. That was Will Ferrara.
Yeah.
Good memory, right? So, this is second match of the night, Silas Young versus Will Ferrara. A pretty simple match, the finish came when Young sent Ferrara into the bottom turnbuckle with a mean-looking DDT. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether he was meant to hit the bottom turnbuckle or miss it, but, yeah, he took that full-on in the face. It looked like it stung. In the kind of downtime, Staunton Castle's boys ran out onto the apron. They looked to be assuming a kind of suggested position at the start of it that made me like, oh, wow, this is taking a turn, but... No, it was just one was hanging through the bottom rope, one went over the top, and they were, like, waving and blowing kisses at Silas Young. He had Will Ferrara on his shoulders at one point and, like, let him off to go and shout at the boys. Will Ferrara snuck in behind him, rolled him up for the schoolboy to get the 1-2-3. Young wasted no time in beating the crap out of the boys. He sent one to the outside, dragged one in with a Roppong DDT.
That was
and
great.
I think it was the same. I think it was the same one he hit with his... spinning diamond cutter, yeah, which is a much better finish for him. We'll get to that in a second, but yeah, I really like that finish. And yeah, no sign of Dalton Castle, and they kind of cut abruptly there. Like I said, it was an okay match. It did get a miss on my hit list, but that was me grading on a curve of saying this was the weakest match of the show.
That's harsh. That's harsh.
Really?
Well, it was, as you said, it was the weakest match on the show. But I didn't really have. I didn't sort of watch it and was bored. I thought it was pretty decent.
Oh, me neither. I wouldn't say I was bored, but I couldn't tell you. Like I said, I can read the finish to you, but I can't remember anything else that happened during the match. It was pretty forgettable.
I think with Silas Young, because he offers something different in ROH than the majority of the roster. For me, it sort of stands out. The one spot that does stand out to me was Ferrara was on the mat and he picked him up with one arm and threw him over his shoulder, and I just thought, you know, you don't see that often in ROH these days, and I just thought it was a great spot to highlight the sort of wrestler that Silas Young is.
See, I've said this on many different podcasts before, but I have never once like clicked with the Silas Young character. I think I know what. There's several little factors that means I've never been a fan of his work. And trust me, I really want to. If you don't know the Silas Young story, go put in a little bit of research, because if you want someone to succeed in wrestling, it is Silas Young. Trust me on that one. But I don't know. Just the Last Real Man gimmick, I think, has legs as a concept, but I don't know if he pulls it off properly. The spitting, his general. Look, I don't like the fact he always goes for like the cheapest way to get heat by just hurling abuse at people.
It's a very old school type sort of gimmick. Like we said, going after the crowd before the match and jawing with them. You know, that's a very old school sort of 1980s sort of tactic to get the crowd against you.
And I'm not trying to date you here, Hayden, but. You maybe were more exposed to that type of heel than I have ever been. Again, I'm not trying to date you, but I'm just saying I have only been watching wrestling. You've been watching wrestling longer than me. That's a better way to put it.
I think we established when we went to PCW that the first show that I ever saw was actually on your birth on the day you were born.
Was it January 20th, 1991?
Yeah, Royal Rumble 1991 is the first ever show that I saw on television. And
Wow, that was the day I was born.
Spookily enough, that was the day you were born, so there you go.
Yeah, I was born on the Royal Rumble, like, Sunday, so that makes me pretty happy. But, so that explains the gulf to you, ladies and gentlemen. So I think my tolerance towards that type of old-school heel. Now, as I said, he's got rid of the finisher that made no sense. He used to do... Right, it was a really cool move. It really was. He would do a headstand on the top turnbuckle and then transition into a springboard, a seated springboard moonsault. It was awesome. But in terms of fitting the Last Real Man, it was completely alien. The two ideas were so divorced from each other.
Exactly.
The Last Real Man would punch you in the face. He wouldn't do flip-de-do stuff.
And that's the thing, the sort of gimmick and the way and the whole tagline of the Last Real Man, it's someone you'd see in a bar that you just wouldn't want to fight, and that finishing move is not something that you would see in a bar fight. That always took me out the moment when I saw him do that.
Exactly, it's like I'm going to fight you, but first I'm going to do backflips.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense. But having said that, he's changed the finish and. He seems to have fed into the best feud for him right now, because the Dalton Castle Silas Young's feud makes so much, like, instant sense that these two would not get along. I get that aspect, and I am appreciative both of this feud and the fact that it seems that undercard feuds are going to become a thing in Ring of Honor. We haven't had that before, and maybe that grates against the ROH norm, and I don't want that to change. Trust me on that one, but, you know, a little more care and attention given to the undercard is always, instead of just having them have random matches, a little bit of storyline can go a long way. And as I said last week, I am a big Dalton Castle fan.
Yeah. I wanted to give you the floor to say your love for Dalton Castle.
I did last week. I kind of went on my I got on my soapbox last week about how much I just adore the Dalton Castle character. It's just that type of comedy. They say funny isn't money, but I vehemently disagree with that. He's so entertaining, and this feud just, like, yes, everything about this feud, yes.
And my opinion on Dalton Castle, and you'll appreciate this more than anyone, is R.D. Evans taken seriously?
I don't even think he's taken seriously.
No, I mean as an in-ring competitor.
Yeah, he is, that was always the flaw in R.D. Evans' game. I could watch his matches all day, but I'm just a stickler for... I like comedy wrestling, so there's that, but... Yeah, like they've pointed out a few times that Dalton Castle can get it done in the ring. He's very flamboyant when he does it, but he's a legit Greco-Roman guy. Like, he has a lot of holes and stuff that he can do that puts him, like, above even, like, the types of Santino. Like, he can get it done. So that's why, again, everything about this feud, yes, it was odd that good guy Dalton Castle didn't run down to protect his boys. He didn't run down to protect the skinny Usos, but... Like, that was a little bit odd. I think that was the thing that also made this more of a miss. Like, you would expect the babyface to run out to help his boys, but that didn't happen. That was a slightly odd. And again, the abrupt cut. Maybe he did run out, but they just cut it for time. I don't know, but I could have done with that.
Did you notice that Kevin Kelly was shouting, "We need some help out here, guys. Get out here. Hurry up." And then a couple of seconds later, he said, "Right, we need to go to a break now. The main event's coming up." It just made me laugh. I just right. burst out laughing. I know it's a timing thing, and I know it was unfortunate, but it just made me laugh so much.
What I think is that Kevin Kelly's always shouting for help. At least once an episode of Ring of Honor, he's always shouting for somebody to run out and help. I think they've just, like, it's like the boy who cried wolf.
He did the same in the first match as well, when Sydal got knocked into the chairs. He did exactly the same. We need some help out here. So it loses impact. Help.
Yeah, you know, how many times can you say it? I'm like, we get it, Kelly. People need help. It's wrestling. People get punched. Calm down. we went to Mandy Leone on the Inside ROH feature. She recapped, helpfully for me, the Moose and Alexander shenanigans from Best in the World, in which Alexander turned his back on Caprice Coleman, his old tag team partner, forced him to lose a match, and then came out... assaulted Moose with I think it was like a ratchet, clattered him, that was Vader Scott joining. Oh, Vader Scott also slapped Moose and slapped Stokely Hathaway, joined Alexander. This sent us into a main event for the evening. Just a quick line that Steve Corino said that made me laugh. Mark Briscoe came out and Kelly said that he'd always wanted to win. His big goal in life is to win the ROH TV Championship. And Karina said his second goal is to own a TV.
I actually missed that. I didn't hear that.
That made me giggle. For all my grievances with him being a little impotent when, you know, the decade stuff is happening, Steve Corino is a fantastic colour commentator.
He has some great lines. He has some great one-liners.
I'd probably go as far as say he's my favourite colour commentator working today. I can't think of anybody else I'd prefer on colour commentary, put it that way.
I would have to think, but yeah, I'd tend to... He's definitely on my top two. I'd have to have a think about that, and we'll talk about it next week.
It's not like it's a lot of competition, no. Let's be fair. Jay Lethal came out second with Truth Martini by his side. Truth Martini has a new book. It's the revised edition. Who cares? And even though he didn't make an entrance, Roderick Strong was shown to be on commentary with Kelly and Corino. And this took us into the third and final match of this episode, which was Jay Lethal defending his ROH TV Championship against Mark Briscoe. Midway through the match, I may have got the order in which this happened muddled, but at some point Jay Diesel ran out. and just blatantly tried to cause a disqualification. Mark Briscoe quickly got on him, threw him out the ring. I think Truth Martini then tried to do something. Oh, yeah, they went to the outside. It looked like Martini was winding up to hit him with the new book. And ODB made her return to Ring of Honor TV, ran out and kind of chased Martini around the ring a little bit. Kelly said a line where it seemed he implied that she'd chased Martini off, but then it showed they were just stood in their respective guys' corners. And, right, let's just skip to the finish. We had two commercial breaks, which I think hindered the match ever so slightly. But we came back from the second commercial break with Mark on the top rope preparing for the Froggy Bow, at which point Jonathan Dijak, another member of the house troop, ran out, jumped on the apron, immediately followed by Jay Briscoe, who came out and took care of Dijak. Then ODB, Martini, and everybody else started brawling at ringside. In the meantime, Mark hit the Froggy Bow on Jay Lethal to get a very good close two count there. When Lethal got up, he got shot into the ropes, kind of dodged around Mark Briscoe and went flying into ODB, completely clattered into ODB, took her out to the point where she hit the barricade fairly stiffly, and you could tell Lethal had his head buried down there asking if she was okay. They they got back into the ring. They didn't get straight back into the ring. Mark Briscoe was trying to get Lethal back into the ring by pulling him up by the hair. Jay Diesel took advantage of the referee being instructed to run in. Low blow Mark Henry appeared. Hit Mark Briscoe with the low bro. Jay Lethal got back in, hit the lethal injection, and pinned Mark Briscoe 1-2-3 to retain the ROH TV title. Just so we... actually, do you want to talk about the match first, and then we'll cover the shenanigans in a second?
Yeah, definitely. Anytime you get either the Briscoes in a single match, you're going to get like a smash-mouth, ass-kicking sort of match. And with Lethal in there as well, it's just almost guaranteed a good match. I personally actually prefer Mark Briscoe's personality to Jay's, as I seem to gravitate towards the weirdos, and that's why I think we get on, Darren. But Jay has...
Thanks.
no problem at all. But Jay has better in-ring work, but Mark is pretty good himself. As for the match itself, it didn't disappoint, but it didn't exceed the relatively high expectations I had going into it. So, you know, I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
I really do like Mark Briscoe in the ring. I think he's underrated. I know he relies slightly too heavily sometimes on the redneck kung fu, but you are right. He's the much more personable of the two Briscoe brothers. He's because they've started to turn subtly on Jay Briscoe, but I don't think they'd ever turn on Mark Briscoe. I couldn't see that ever happening.
I mean, the man tried to climb a steel pillar before the match.
Yeah, he did.
You know, how can you not love the man?
I do. I just love how wacky and absurd he is. I do prefer Jay Briscoe as a wrestler in between the ropes, but yeah, I am a Mark Briscoe fan. But I think this was pretty much ideal for Jay Lethal's first title defense. Mm-hmm. Well, defense of one of his two titles coming out of Best in the World, because Mark Briscoe, I think it's harsh to call him a jobber to the stars. I think he's better than that. He's not in that role. Like, specifically, it's a harsh to pigeonhole him like that, but it's along those lines. He has credibility, but it's also okay for him to lose. You respect him enough to think, well, you probably don't think, no one thought that Jay Lethal was going to lose here, really, but it's not like they threw a tomato can in front of him. Mark Briscoe's got credibility for all his title wins, and he's Teflon. He can shrug off a loss. No problem whatsoever.
Basically, if someone faces Mark Briscoe and beats him, they get credibility and it means something, you know?
Yeah, it's not like beating his brother, but it's not like, you know, they threw, name a random ROH person. They didn't throw, you know, what's his name with the love hearts, the romantic touch out there for Jay Leaf to go and squash, you know what I mean? It means something at least. A very smart idea. Now, after the match, it all kicked off in the ring. There was a stare down between Jay Briscoe and Lethal. Everything started kicking off. Everyone's piling in. Eventually, Roderick Strong gets off of commentary to kind of even up the odds. Gets in, clears house. As the House of Truth are retreating up the ramp, Roderick Strong, it was a bit of a weird line. I see why he did it in retrospect. But he said, right, so there's him, the Briscoes, and ODB. And he goes, there's three of us and three of you. I was like, be a star, Roderick Strong. Be a star. And he said, there's three of us, three of you. let's have a six-man next week on the 200th episode. And then ODB, rightly so, grabbed the mic up and said, there's four of us, and there's four of them. And she basically threw Truth Martini into the mix with the rest of his people, which Steve Carino said, but Truth, you've got a bad neck. and set up, well, Jay Lethal accepted, so they did indeed set up an eight-man tag match for next week, which will be the Briscoes, ODB and Roderick Strong taking on the entirety of the House of Truth. Not a bad plug for next week. Maybe not the momentous match you'd think for a milestone episode like episode 200, but you know, it depends if they actually lend credence to that number or not. I maybe would have booked something slightly bigger, but
I don't know if you caught it earlier in the show, but Kelly and Carino were talking about the 200th TV episode and that they're going to be shown highlights of the history of ROH. So I don't know if that match is the only sort of new content, if you will, and around it is going to be the highlights. And I don't know how many of the previous stars they can show. I don't know what the legalities are there, but I've got a feeling that next week's show is going to be more highlight based as opposed to a new content celebration, if you will.
Well, on the legality side, I imagine they can show whatever match they want because it is
I'd imagine so as well. But
it is their footage, so they could. If they were smart, they'd go and dig up Tyler Brack versus Bryan Danielson and Claudio Castagnoli versus Kevin Steen if they were on point or something along those lines where they'd just throw up those matches. I did grimace a little bit at the thought of Eclipso.
Yeah.
And but you're right, if it's a mix between, they throw in that match as kind of like a house show main event or a dark match main event kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
Where it's just a special little attraction, it's not going to say it's welcome. It's all going to build up to ODB getting a hands on Truth Martini and being the crap out of him. I'll get a pop.
He'll get a pop, but I don't want it to be the main focus because obviously they're trying to build for the Lethal and Strong match for the pay-per-view. So I don't want it to be too much about ODB and Truth Martini. I do want the focus to be on Lethal and Strong. But ROH are usually quite good at that when it comes to the comedy stuff. They have that there, but then the main focus is on the titles.
Well, the way they could get around that is that, Jay Lethal goes over in a schlonky fashion or something like those lines where neither of them are involved in the finish.
Yeah.
And then once the match is done, your closing bit is ODB gets a hand. And what you can actually do to Truth Martini, I don't know, because he has legitimately got very, very bad neck problems. He has been shown to take, when he does take a bump, he tends to take ludicrously dangerous bumps. Massive light plants onto the railing.
Yeah.
He took one once. It was fantastic. I have similar problems to Truth, goddammit, to Truth Martini as everybody else does, that he's quite cheap and tacky. But there was one where he got thrown into the barricade, thrown, so his head was closer to the floor than his feet were. And they cut away for a second, they cut back, and he was stood like a pencil on his head, leaning straight up against the barricade like a plank of wood. It was fantastic. His arms by his side, like dead, upside down. It was fantastic. If they can do that again, that would be fantastic. But yeah, a good hook for next week. Hopefully they do build, as you said, to the much more important match, which will be Jay Lethal versus Roderick Strong.
I was just going to ask you what were your thoughts, because Roderick Strong was on commentary. I just wanted to know what your overall thoughts were of how he did.
I've never been a fan of Roderick Strong on the microphone. I think he was okay. He was fine for a wrestler slotted into that role. It's very hard for a lot of people. John Cena was dull as anything when he was sat on commentary last week on Raw. So, not everybody can do it. And yeah, he didn't set the world on fire. He was okay. He wasn't actively bad, but I can't say I look forward to it again.
He has got better, but he's just still too tense when he's talking.
Yeah.
He doesn't relax into the character, and he's reached his potential in the ring, but in 2015, to stand out with all the other great workers around, you have to have the personality to go with it, and I do worry about that with Roderick Strong.
I think his promo game, again, let's just take the commentary as an anomaly. I think he has stepped up on his promo game, but I do think he has improved since I first, because he was another one where I was like, I get that he's like good in the ring. There's no denying that. He's fantastic in the ring. Now, he's really has been on fire in 2015, but he's never clicked as a character for me. No. He's getting better, but mate, you know, there's a lot of technical wrestlers who never quite get that bit nailed down. But overall thoughts on the show. I will repeat what I said at the beginning with solid, impressive, and feeling both inconsequential and slightly transitional. If that makes any sense, like. It wasn't a show where I can tell you this is the best era of wrestling on TV. Go ahead and watch it. No. But there wasn't anything bad on this show. Nothing even slightly close to bad. There were two. The first two matches were solid. I said my piece about the Silas Young match. There we go. Main event certainly I think is worth a watch if you've got the time.
And I completely agree. It was a solid hour. There was no filler. They built up towards the IP pay-per-view next week, and they left. The viewers with a hook for next week, so you can't really ask for much more than that.
No, you are right, and that is going to do us here for the .NET Ring of Honor podcast. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, I am at The Guttridge. You can also read my Ring of Honor hit list for this episode. We'll be going up on ProWrestling.net pretty much immediately after this podcast. It will be up by the time you hear this podcast. My NXT hit list will also be going up today. Hayden, plug away.
I've got a few things I want to plug. I've written a few blogs over the last 2 weeks. I think it's 3 in 2 weeks, so I've been a busy boy. Me and John Moore are hoping to get together sometime over the weekend to record a TNA audio review, considering I haven't watched TNA for a few weeks and I've kind of lost interest as well. It should be quite interesting, so look out for that over the weekend. And as usual, my Twitter handle is at Hayden Glee, just my name.
Does that mean that in the last 2 weeks, I have watched more TNA than you have?
Yes.
I actually watched a piece of TNA.
That sounds dodgy in a vacuum, but I know what you mean. If anyone over here who's not a wrestling fan heard you say, I've watched a piece of TNA over the last couple of weeks.
Oops. I watched a part of Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. I felt compelled to watch the EC3 title match. So I have actually watched more TNA than you in the past 2 weeks, and that makes me feel very odd.
I haven't watched TNA since the whole Mickey James being pushed in front of a stationary train. I just lost interest. But I'm gonna be watching it this week, and me and John are gonna be reviewing it.
In hopes of not starting an hour-long grant on TNA, we're going to end this podcast here for your sake more so than ever. And thank you very much for listening, and we will see you again next week.